Good morning, Medford. It is 7 a.m. and you're listening to 91.5 WMFO, the Tufts Freeform Radio. My name is Marion. What you just heard is the Concerto for Lute and Pluck Strings 1 Moderato from the Grand Budapest Hotel, which, as you might have understood, has kind of become the opening song for my show. So, speaking of that, you're listening and I'm super excited to have you tune in for the second episode of my show Radio Europe. So for those who tune in and don't know the concept, Radio Europe is a show where we talk about Europe, listen to European music, read some European texts, and basically try to understand what Europe means to you and what it means to me. Last time we looked at the concept at birth, and today we're looking at a very European theme, love. But not love as in love and birds and doves. No, we're looking at love as in love and sickness. The ends of love, to quote the title of an episode of a show that I love, This American Life, in which I decided to rename this show, The Ends of Love. So just a couple of disclaimers before we start. As much as I'm trying to encompass the entirety of Europe, I am biased. I was born and raised in France and have traveled in Europe a little bit, but have not lived anywhere else in Europe. So I'm trying to encompass the entirety of it, but I cannot pretend to offer you a complete view of Europe. I view each episode as a sort of brief introduction for you to be able to have a taste of what Europe means to me. And ultimately, I do hope that Europe means something to you by the end of each episode. So, anyways, love, or rather, the ends of love. It's a very cheesy theme to talk about. Yeah, like, I love you, we get it. But love associated to sickness becomes much more dramatic and much more tragic, and hence, much more easy to talk about, without falling into stupid clichés that makes absolutely no sense to anyone. So, before we really get started and kick off, how about we listen to her first song before I tell you who the key figure regarding love and sickness is? Stay tuned.
This is the way you left me. I'm not pretending. No hope, no love, no glory, no happy end. This is the way that we love, like it's forever. Then live the rest of our lives, but not together. I wake up in the morning, stumble on my life. Can't get no love without sacrifice. If anything should happen, I guess I wish it well. But a little bit of heaven. This is the hardest story I've ever told. Oh, beloved glory, happy endings gone forevermore. And I feel as if I'm wasted. And I
way. just a little bit of love.
Little bit of love, little bit of love, little bit of love.
Okay, we sort of run into a little technical trouble here, but nothing too concerning. Excuse me for this little disturbing ending. We were listening to Happy Ending, the orchestra version by Mika. And yeah, basically that was it. So, there is indeed no happy ending, ironically, in The Ends of Love. But there is something beautiful in it. The capacity that we, as human beings, have to care for one another. Let me just tell you a story about that. So, when I was 15, which is much further back than I would like to admit, my grandmother fell ill. She had a very rare form of cancer and she suffered a lot. Like, of course, I was very young. I have no precise recollection of what happened. I mean, I know what happened, but I cannot really make sure that I know exactly and like trace back the dates. But when preparing this show, I was thinking about it, and like, it strikes me to see how my entire family developed an entire support system around her. My mother, who was her daughter-in-law, she visited her every week when she was in the hospital. And my uncle, he drove 3 hours almost every weekend to come see her. And my cousins did the same. And like my aunt and my mom, they bought her sweaters so that they would be sure that she would not be cold. And all of this kind of things, we invited her for dinners, we had her over all the time. An entire network system and support system. My grandma, she can never be reduced to her sickness, precisely because until the very end, she never stopped caring about any, like, everyone. Like, this last time I saw her, she was sick and she was seated in her chair and she was talking about my cousins and she was telling me how she hoped that they were doing well. And in her sickness, what I understood is that my family was ready to go to the ends of love. And yet, there was no happy ending, but again, when preparing this show, I was more than impressed to see that we can care for one another with such strength. And you're going to tell me, how is that experience European? Everybody has heard similar stories across the globe. It's nothing but human nature. It has nothing to do with Europe. And yeah, I mean, you're right. There's nothing European in the way we experience this. But in Europe, to me, there was one character who has a story, and it makes me cry all the time. It's someone who was loved until the ends of love, and someone who loved until the ends of love.
Thank you.
So that character from Europe, he's a writer and he's one who's very important to me. His name is Franz Kafka. Okay, so everybody who somehow knows me is aware that I have an obsession for Kafka. It's not that I especially like his writings, I think they're very disturbing to any human being, but there's something to be said about love, and especially about the ends of love and sickness through his character. Something that is European indeed, and in the way it all plays out, but there's also something universal in Kafka's story. So let me just sum it up for you. Kafka had been sick his entire life. He died super early, probably euthanized by one of his doctors. During the last weeks of his life, he could not eat anymore, he could not speak, and he who had written all his life, he could barely write. It is very hard to sum up the life of Kafka. He was born and raised in Prague in Czech Republic, but he wrote in German. He was a very lonely child, and even a lonelier adult. He had a challenging relationship with his father. He was never able to marry anyone, besides having been engaged several times. He was sick, and his poor condition defined most of his life, and conditioned most of his life. But he was also extremely creative, visionary, and brutal as a writer. He had a wonderfully bond to his sister, Otla, who supported him until the end. He was funny and he had a great sense of self-parody. He was a wonderful writer and he wrote letters that were pure and beautiful, and he was modest. He was very smart also. He spoke multiple languages and mostly, he was caring. One of the common points between Kafka and my grandmother, besides their love for German, is this. Both did not listen to music, which is at the very least annoying when preparing a radio show. But anyways, during his life, Kafka never got married, which was one of the topics that made his relationship with her father even more challenging. But not being married did not prevent him from knowing love, with Felice Bauer, his first fiancée, Milena Jesenska, the translator of his novels, and Leslie Dora Diamant, the one who brought him to the threshold of happiness. These three women are more than fascinating figures, and I can only encourage you to learn more about them. But for the purpose of this show, I'm mostly interested in two, Milena and Dora. Milena and Kafka did not see each other much, but their correspondence was intense. We only have Kafka's letters to her. I read them all last year, and her tenderness is simply outstanding. But before I read you some extracts, let's listen to some other songs that I will present afterwards. Okay, So just some couple of quotes in the letters and Kafka's letters addressed to Milena, which I just thought would be worth sharing. Please pay attention to the mentions of sickness intertwined with love in his letters. So, dear Milena, I wish the world were ending tomorrow. Then I could take the next train, arrive at your doorstep in Vienna, and say, come with me, Milena. We're going to love each other without the scruples of fear or restraints, because the world is ending tomorrow. Perhaps we don't love unreasonably because we think we have time or have to reckon with time. But what if we don't have time? Or what if time, as we know, is irrelevant? Ah, if only the world were ending tomorrow, we could help each other very much. I'm thinking only on my illness and my health, though both, the first as well as the second, are you. I can't think anything to write about, but I'm just walking around here, between the lines, under the light of your eyes, in the breadth of your mouth, in this happy is beautiful day, which remains happy and beautiful, even when the head is sick and tired. This afternoon, I could not get out of bed, not because I was too tired, but because I was too, quote, heavy. Again and again, that word, it's the only word that fits me. Do you understand this at all? It's something like the heaviness of a ship which has lost its rudder and which says to the waves, I am too heavy for myself and for you too light. But that is past and should remain deep in the past. Your letters have arrived today at noon. They aren't there to be read, but to be enfolded, to rest one's face while losing one's mind. You are the knife I turn myself. Sorry, I'll do that one again. You are the knife I turn inside myself. That is love. That, my dear, is love. And so that was the first story about Kafka, which is one of my favorites ever. So the second one is this one. I've told it a dozen of times about everyone, and it still gives me shivers down my spine for some reason. So I'm going to try to tell it to you once again. About 6 months before his death, Kafka was in Berlin with Dora Diamo. Dora Diamo is like his last lover, the one who was with him until the very end. So at this time, he was suffering more than any human being can think of. He had tuberculosis, and the only thing that he could do in Berlin was take long walks in the city. As I said, he died in excruciating pain, and like the last month of his life have been horrible. So even 6 months before was very hard, definitely. There was not much to do except for working for them in Berlin. He would be coughing at all times, he would be feeble and thinner than he usually was, and he already was pretty thin. And knowing that his last week, again, was spent in so much pain, we can imagine how he felt at that time already. I do think that he knew that his health was deteriorating, and he was probably trying to enjoy the threshold of happiness he would never be able to pass back. So anyways, they were in Berlin, and they were walking around in a park. While they were walking, they saw a little girl who was crying in a sandbox. And then, again, I cannot stress how much Kafka was sick, or how sick he was. Many adults in that situation would have probably walked away and like walked by. They wouldn't have gone to see her. Kafka did. He knelt down to ask her what was wrong, and the little girl who was still sobbing told him that she had lost her doll. In the number of tragedies that one can encounter, losing a doll does not look significant to any adult. It is a tragedy for a six-year-old, but it is definitely not something that seems to matter for older individuals. When that little girl told him that she had lost her doll, Kafka answered, "No, you have not. No, you have not. She went on an adventure, and she sent me a letter to tell me about it." The little girl looked at him suspiciously. I mean, even a child could doubt the veracity of such an assertion. Kafka noticed that, and what he told her is, "Do you not believe me? Then come back here tomorrow at the same time, and I'll give you the letter that she sent me." And then what happened is that they went back home with Dora, and friends started working on the letter of the doll. And Dora says that she has never seen him being so immersed and focused on a piece of writing before. He was actually pretty stressed and anxious, turns out, to write this, and he put so much effort into writing this letter for a little girl he did not know while he was literally dying. So the next day, he went back to the park, and the little girl was still here. He gave her the letter. She was curious, and he told her that she would get one every day, and that he would give it to her. During days, and even during weeks, Kafka wrote letters to this little girl and invented an amazing number of adventures that her doll went through. In the last letter, he wrote her that after having traveled the world, she had gotten a little house in the country with her fiancé, and that she was going to live a very quiet, tranquil, happy life. Month before he died, 6 months, a little girl, he didn't know. In the sandbox, crying, doll lost, letters written, and he gave that to her. Okay, just a little reminder, you're listening to 91.5 WMFO Medford, the Tufts Freeform Radio. My name is Marion, and you're currently listening to my show, Radio Europe. Today's the second episode of this show, and we're looking at the ends of love. But just a small interruption, we are doing the PSA now, so numbers to think about in our PSA. Some numbers to think about. The United States has less than 5% of the planet's population, but incarcerates 24% of its prisoners, and accounts for 43% of the world's military total spending. A public service message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio. Before we get back to Kafka's story and what we can actually draw from it, I would like to make you listen to another song, and I promise that I will tell you what this song are if you stay tuned. So, you know, as I've been telling you, this story I've told an endless number of times because I find it simply beautiful. And most of the time, I was met with positive reactions. Most of the time, people also found it beautiful. But one day, I told it to someone who's extremely dear to me, and their reaction was not positive. They viewed the story as an adult lying to a child to comfort him. And I've been thinking about what they told me because for some reason it really did hurt me to see that that person did not cherish that story as much as I did. I really took it personally for a reason that to this day I still cannot quite grasp. So I thought about it a lot, I thought about it over and over again, and I thought about why I liked it, I thought about why I did not view it as an adult comforting a child by using delusion. Okay, and here is my conclusion. I think this story is dear to me for three reasons. The first one is what I was talking about earlier in the show. The first one is empathy. There is empathy, or rather, Mitgefühl. Just a small point about that. We use compassion, but the root of compassion is Spezio in Latin, which means like suffer, whereas with Mitgefühl, it's just like the idea that you share a feeling with someone. And since Kafka was German, or like did speak German, I thought it made sense to say it. I'm not saying it just because I think it's cool. So there's empathy, or rather Mitgefühl, that is a feeling felt along with someone in a moment where you would not expect it. What I mean by that is that, again, Kafka was sick and dying, and still, he found the energy to comfort someone he did not know for a tragedy who could have passed as insignificant to him. The capacity that human beings have to care for one another, and that until the very ends of love, just looks wonderful to me. And that's actually linked to the second reason why I also love this story. Like, okay, how do we actually know about these letters? We've never found them anywhere, we've never read them, and I've tried to look for them, and a countless number of times have researched Kafka's letter, doll, whatever you want to think of, and I have not found them, and nobody has. We don't know where they are. Kafka never wrote about this. It's not in his journal, it's nowhere to be found in his writings. He probably didn't even tell anyone. So one other reason for me to think that this was an act of pure kindness and generosity towards someone else is this. And we actually know about these letters thanks to Dora Diamond. She's the one who told the story to the public. I don't know if she wrote it in her journal or if she talked about it after Kafka's death, but she talked about it. She's the one thanks to whom we know. And this is my point here. Had Dora not written about it, we probably would not have known this. So how many acts of care, kindness, Mitgefühl, compassion, whatever you want to call it, of comfort are done in the world without us even knowing? And the third reason why I disagreed with my friend, is that I do not believe that Kafka was lying or using delusion to comfort this child. He did not tell her that this doll would come back, or that she had not lost it. He acknowledged her pain, and for the reason what she felt this, and the reason why she felt the pain, and he did what he knew he could to reassure her. So Kafka just helped her to go through grief and loss. He just helped her walk by the stages of grief and loss by writing these letters. And by writing those letters, he simply helped that little girl picture that there was something that she could use when loss happens. Imagination. He taught her, through mere letters, a coping mechanism to deal with pain. And it's not being delusional, rather being creative in the way they experience things. The pain that is felt can partly be overcome with the power of imagination. And also on the side, I'm not really sure that neither that little girl considered those letters to actually be true and have been written by the doll. I think that there was a suspension of disbelief, but that both of them knew that Kafka was making this up. This little girl may have chosen to believe it, but probably deep down she knew that it was a story. And we need to tell ourselves stories to overcome the suffering that existence brings. And to me, those letters, they're simply a bond created between two individuals who should never have met, and just another proof that we can reach the ends of love and that we can care for one another, and that by doing what we can comfort people. And it's not using delusion to actually be writing letters for this doll or for this little girl. It's just saying, hey, I've noticed, and I do care, although we do not know each other. Well, anyways, that was just my little hot take on this. This is 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, the Tufts Freeform Radio. You're listening to Radio Europe and the second episode of this show called The Ends of Love. Welcome if you've just tuned in. Okay, to punctuate this story about Kafka, these stories actually, because I've told you a couple, I've been playing a series of piano songs called Variations on a Theme by Robert Schumann. These songs that you heard were composed by Clara Schumann, who's often remembered as Schumann's wife, but was also and mostly a genius pianist and music composer. She stopped composing because she thought that she should dedicate herself to her household and her husband. Robert Schumann himself suffered from mental and physical illness that drove him to have visions and nightmares, and he was frightened to hurt Clara so bad that he forbade her to visit him. She came in 2 days before his death, and she watched him suffer from afar. But throughout his entire life, she was a reassuring presence for Robert Schumann. The reason why I play these songs is also because there is a link in between those songs and The Ends of Love. Clara Schumann really was there until the very end for her husband, and after he died, she said that the only moment of comfort that she felt was when she was listening to her deceased husband music. She cared for him until the very end, until his very end, and even those variations that she wrote on the theme by Robert Schumann are something that she qualified variations that she calls attempts. So she does not even recognize that it was actually really, really well written, but she considered it a gift for her husband. Anyways, right now I'm just going to play this final variation composed by Clara Schumann, dedicated to her husband, variations that, again, she only called attempts. And, you know, the thing about Clara Schumann is that she thought that she could not pretend to be the first woman to be smart enough to write music. And she had a beginning of a career as a musician, and then she said, no, that would be too pretentious of mine to pretend that I can actually write music. No woman has done that before. I should focus on my household and my husband. And so the irony is that today she's remembered as one of the most influential figures of romantic music, because not only did she compose songs, although she did not compose that much because she was dedicated to something else, not only did she compose some songs, she was also very influential and contributed to the success of her husband, Robert Schumann, but also Brahms. After Schumann's death, she had a very intense friendship with Brahms, and she really helped him kick off and get some success. So anyways, this is the last variation this is the last variation on a theme by Robert Schumann, composed by Clara Schumann, and the version I've been playing here was interpreted by Benjamin Grosvenor. Just listen, and hopefully you'll enjoy. Thank you. Good morning, Medford. It is 7:46 and you're still listening to 91.5 WMFO, the Tufts Freeform Radio. You've just been listening to the last variation on a theme by Robert Schumann, composed by Clara Schumann. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Listening to music in the studio is so nice with all of the sound system that we have. Anyways, there is one last story about the ends of love, and it is about our dear Frédéric Chopin. How could I do a show on love and not talk about Frédéric Chopin? I know, which is why I'm doing it now. So, when he left Paris, Chopin met Maria Voldinsky. She was the daughter of his parents' friends, and they fell in love. He fell in love with her, rather, and he was engaged to marry her, but the wedding had to be postponed due to Chopin's bad health. Again, the ends of love. He wrote the Farewell Waltz on the morning of his departure from Dresden, and the relationship ended. So we're just going to listen to this waltz, which is the number 9 in A flat major, opus 69-1. And the version I'm going to play is played by, interpreted by Dino Lipari. I've chosen that one because I think that the sound of the piano is really nice and unexpected. I don't know if you'll notice it. I hope you will. But anyways, Chopin's waltz about the ends of love, if I may say. Okay, looks like we're... Okay, so as you might have heard, we have been running into a little bit of technical issues since my computer is not super happy with what I do right now. I hope it's gonna be alright, but if the music is ever interrupted, just know that this is because we're live. We're live from 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, so this is not a pre-recorded show, as you can see. So you've just been listening to a waltz by Chopin, a waltz about the love that he definitely had lost with the Farewell Waltz. And before we wrap up this show, I wanted to play another waltz by Chopin, the one in A minor, played by Katia Braunschweiler. And then I'm going to wrap up this show and come to a conclusion because I have to leave you soon. So waltz by Chopin, another one, because I cannot resist it. Just one last thing. While preparing this show, I was reading some stuff about Chopin, obviously, and I heard that what he was doing was trying to have songs and waltz that you could actually sing. I mean, the melody that you could actually sing, which I think is really relevant in the case of that specific waltz. Anyways, let's sum it up. I attempted to do a brief conclusion to that show. There is no brief conclusion, as this is just like a very short introduction. So to talk about love, as I intended to do so today, so the ends of love, to talk about that is ultimately to pay a tribute to women who've been there during the ends. Even today in the US, more than 50% of informal caregivers are women. There is such an essential part of the ends of love, if not completely essential part of love and life itself, that to talk about the ends of love is to talk about Clara, Dora, Milena, and my grandma Solange, wonderful human beings that remain in the shadow of the men they've devoted their lives to. It is also to talk about the men who have suffered and still have been able to give love and show empathy until the very end. And here I am, of course, talking about my dear friends Kafka. It's not that I want to make a point about gender here, but still, I think there's something to be said about that. We tend to remember the men and their suffering and the sickness they underwent, which is, of course, terrible, but we rarely thank and appreciate the presence of the women in those times. I hope that listening to their songs or their stories has helped you to believe that you will admire and cherish women till the very ends, the ends of love. My name is Marion. You've just been listening to Radio Europe. I'll see you in 2 weeks, same time, same station, 91.5 WMFO Medford, VTEFT's free from radio, and do not forget to keep it freeform.
L'amour, l'amour dont on parle toujours, à l'amour, C'est un printemps craintif, une lumière attendrie, ou souvent une ruine. L'amour, l'amour, c'est le poivre du temps, une rafale de vent, une feuillée de lune. L'amour, l'amour, à l'amour dont on parle toujours. L'amour met la nuit un bonnet et le jour porte un masque qui veut que l'on grimace. L'amour, l'amour, c'est parfois même aussi le visage d'un autre qui n'est ni lui ni l'autre. À l'amour, à l'amour, à l'amour dont on parle toujours. À l'amour, c'est plus d'une fois un panier vide au bras, l'arc-en-ciel sur deux cœurs. À l'amour, c'est quand je t'aime, à l'amour, c'est quand tu m'aimes, sans me le dire, sans te le dire. À l'amour, l'amour c'est quand tu m'aimes, l'amour c'est quand je t'aime.